So I did a thing that I always did before class, namely did the homework right before, and did it not kind of thoroughly, and well, tried to wing it. So I just watched some Adrian Mole.
How was it?
It seems like he came from a rather dysfunctional family.
Not to get all Tolstoy about it, but like, are there any non-dysfunctional families?
The last line before I called you up on Skype was, "You are not like the mother in on television."
There's some fourth wall breaking or something.
Yeah, but there has been a few mothers after this series, I guess, because I guess she kind of were, but yeah. So last night I began to watch a new show on Netflix called Atypical.
Okay, I haven't heard of it. Tell me about it.
And this is a show about I guess they say he's on the spectrum. So I guess a slightly autistic teenager.
Okay.
Is that even allowed to say anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. We're getting into all kinds of uncomfortable slash self-diagnostic slash, yeah, I don't know. But they have a premise for the show. Okay.
Yeah. Sam, an 8-year-old on the autism spectrum, decides it's time to find a girlfriend.
Okay.
And from the little I watched of Adrian Mole, .. Is he supposed to be on the spectrum?
Couldn't say. I think it dates from a time like it was written in the mid-80s, maybe, and it early 80s, and it dates from a time when people did not like discuss the word autism daily. I'm not sure it was even like a well kind of known thing. I'm trying to think. There was a kid in my class who was subsequently diagnosed with autism around that sort of age, around that kind of time, and I don't think it was well understood at all. So, if any similarity, I guess, is either inadvertent or, yeah, you got me. I don't know. I'm not that kind of
Yeah, because
psychologist.
are there different kinds?
Oh boy, you want to make the episode about that? I'll taxonomize the heck out of psychology, but really, I think we have better things to talk about. Actually, do we have better things to talk about?
Do we have better things to talk about?
I don't know. So you jokingly
Because
said that this should be the episode that is called No Agenda, because we have zero agenda.
we have one item.
Was that the one that you just did?
No.
And, oh, yes. Indeed. I forgot to thank Lorena for bringing, among other things, not Iron Brew, Kit Kats and something else. But I thanked Ida for the Iron Brew, so I thought I should probably thank Lorena for the other stuff that she brought so that you could taste it. How was your sugar come down after last week?
Well, before that, I also have to thank Lorena, I guess.
For your sugar high.
Yeah. Yeah, I did have one, and I did also have a crash. So there's
I'm
that.
sorry about that. Was it worth
But
it?
the
It was for science.
embarrassment.
But the embarrassment.
Yeah, but the, yeah, after picking Kit Kat as the quick lunch, yeah.
Are you still wallowing in humiliation?
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay because we haven't actually published last week's episode yet, so no one knows yet. So if you want, I
Oh,
can just kill it.
spoiler warning, or
Right.
I'm also sorry about that. I got the editing edited in short stick last week, and as usual, I take my time.
It's fine. You get it in the end.
Because I have to record it on cassette tapes, and the scissor and the tape and actually cut it before I sort of digitize it again.
This is the most hipster podcast. We're so not.
So this could be us be silent for 1 hour and 20 minutes.
The John Cage episode. I like it.
But actually, I thought about taking this meta and talk about... we both have kind of a slow start, I guess, to get in the groove after the summer.
Yeah. It's my impression. There. Definitely. I have had holiday jet lag for the last 2 weeks. I feel like I'm now finally climbing out of it, but gosh. You?
Yeah, the same. And it is August still, so it's technically still summer.
Mm.
But yeah.
It feels like autumn, though. This morning I got up half an hour before the sun came up. That feels like a marker of some kind. And the balcony lights were still on, which are solar activated, were still on. It was dark enough when I got up.
For me, it's a bit weird because this it's like the seasons. It's like we don't have seasons anymore because it's always raining and the temperature is like 15 degrees all year.
You know, you could have the same Give effect if you moved to Hawaii, yeah. But like it would be less wet and a bit warmer. Do you know the trees in Hawaii don't have like rings? You can't count the age of a tree with the rings. So I understand.
Is this a fun fact episode?
Oh, it could be the fun fact episode.
Or the QI episode?
Oh, God forbid. Someone's going to call. Someone's going to like ping us on Twitter and say actually. That, like, this is not, actually, this is not true at all. But I had heard that because the seasons vary so little, you don't get the kind of characteristic buildup of bark and stuff, so you don't get kind of countable rings. Are you Googling this now?
Fact-checking. Perhaps. But, yeah, it's kind of a slow start. But also, I have taken to following Twitter again.
Right.
And it's what? Like mental scarification or something because... yeah, why? I also got to argue with some dude on Facebook yesterday. I don't know why. Why?
Because he was wrong on the internet.
Yeah, he was very much wrong on the internet. Because after this Google manifesto thing...
Oh, God.
And we have this... There's this discussion group, Norwegian discussion group on Facebook after a TV show called Hjernevask, or Brainwashed in English. Have you heard of this?
Actually, no. Is it good?
It's interesting. And again, Harald Eia, the comedian, the one person behind the Kamelåsa Danish can't understand each other's sketch. So he went pop psy and made a sort of a documentary thing about how, gender studies didn't take biology into account or take it seriously and so on. And he called people on some bullshit. But then again, yeah, there was a backlash and so on. Yeah, I guess you can see it on YouTube.
Was it angry white man babies who were the backlash movement? Or?
It was a bit... The problem is he had some fair points because the humanities can get very... Yeah, I guess...
Navel-gazy?
Yeah, and a bit like not connecting with the real world-ish. Theoretical, yeah. Perhaps. But yeah, so even though this show were kind of fair and nuanced, the people who watched it and took the discussion further aren't.
Hmm.
So here you have this guy who claims that Evolutionary biology is the true science and the exhibitor of truth about everything, and postmodernism is cancer. And I tried to lecture him on some history of science and stuff, and that's obviously
didn't
work. That
always goes well. I find lecturing people on the internet, particularly on social media, I find goes extremely well. Good job.
I tried to do some Socratic dialectic, but well.
Yeah, the other person has to want to be there.
I guess. So. Yeah. I didn't have any illusions that I would convince this person. I don't know.
If it helps, and it probably doesn't, last weekend I spent several hours typing to, like, guess what, Google Manifesto, like the same source material, basically. And then someone had written a kind of response to this, and I spent several hours kind of finding evidence and kind of meticulously taking apart this guy's argument, which was not particularly sophisticated and, you know, in places just flat out wrong. And then I kind of took a breath and I looked him up on the internet and was right, okay, so this guy is a practicing minister, like professionally, and he does not have any neuroscience training, and I could, you know, and he's writing for this sort of libertarian-ish organ. And I could spend even more time taking this apart. Like I did it initially, I did it for the intellectual kind of exercise. Okay, let's deconstruct someone's bad argument and let's refute it piece by piece, because I'm getting a little slack at doing that. Like I don't have to do that in my day job anymore. So I thought, okay, let's make this a workout. And I just got so far in. I was just like, you know what? No one needs to read this. No one who needs to read this is going to take it the way I want them to take it. I still have something, and then I read a piece in The Economist. I was like sort of undecided about whether to publish this or not, and I read a piece in The Economist where they actually refute at the sort of statistics type level a number of the misapprehensions. If you can make a misapprehension in a blog post, a number of the kind of, you know, the logical problems and scientific errors being made. And I was just, oh, thank God, someone has written this for me. I don't have to write it. But there's still some stuff out there that I don't know. There's like a more general post that I might publish at some point, which is just about, okay, right, when you find information on the internet, this is how it got there, and this is all the information that never made it to the internet. So what you're finding is a subset of a subset of a subset that, you know, is only pressing the confirmation bias button, basically. And I may or may not publish that. I don't know if there's much value in that for people. But yes, yeah, so much angry typing into a box after this Google Manifesto bullshit. Oh my God, I can't even.
But you are just a part of the leftist agenda.
Yes, I am. I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah, I guess it's time to be. Because on the one side, you have these doofuses that...
I think the plural is doofi.
Doofi.
Doofus one, doofus two, doofi.
And on the other side, you have fascism rising up again.
See, this is the problem, though, is this kind of like arbitrary binary kind of, you know, I'm not saying that fascism is not on the rise, merely that we've done this on the one side and on the other, or on the one hand and on the other, kind of binary. And there's an awful lot of mess in between where which is entirely my problem, actually, with the Google Manifesto thing, is there's an awful lot of overlap in between where the truth is not at all clear.
And, yeah.
Sorry, that, apparently the coffee has kicked in.
And this is my problem with white guys, like I am, proclaiming to be adherents of science and claiming a scientific stance on everything. It's remarkable that they all lack... at least in how they express themselves, curiosity and sort of the humbleness for that the world is very complex. And if you actually did science, you would see that.
Right. But it's much easier to just Google some cherry-picked facts.
And buy a Richard Dawkins shirt or something. I don't know.
Is there a high overlap between these people and Richard Dawkins people, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's very much a circle of a Venn diagram. One circle.
Hmm.
Is this what people tune in for?
I'm not altogether sure. This was the No Agenda episode, though. See, you said something in the week, just to make it even more meta. You said, like, we need to pivot soon. And I was like, right, okay, you know, this is interesting. Are we actually running out of small differences to talk about? Haven't I become too... have I gone too native?
I think this is... we have to recall the bathroom, the bathtub distribution again. Because in the beginning, there are lots of small differences, and then it sort of decreases.
Mm.
And in a year, it will be many again.
Explain.
Because you have taken a deeper dive into Norwegian culture. So now you are just sort of in the middle surface area, and when we go deeper...
What lies between the superficial, composed largely of Brunost and Vofler, and like what else is there?
Well, I
Death.
Don't know.
Death.
Yeah, and I guess we will find out.
I guess. I feel like there is definitely. I feel like I've stopped noticing a lot of stuff. Like I've normalized a lot of stuff. Which is nice because, you know, that's probably an evolutionary mechanism. Go me. Look at me. I'm so science. But like it is, right? Like if everything is surprising all the time, it becomes very difficult to sift signal from noise. So I guess bits of my brain are doing a lot of work to try and not have that happen. Did the light just go off there? Are you sitting in the dark?
No, I'm turning off my terminal.
Ah.
It's taking resources. Memory
yeah.
sources, even.
Hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. Like I'm just having a subjective experience of the fact that like things are just kind of okay. This is how I, you know, this is my life now. I have to use less energy to think about speaking Norwegian, which is good.
Yeah, that seems a good thing.
It is. It means I make more mistakes, though, or different mistakes, maybe.
Probably different, and yeah. We didn't mention this, I guess, but you started, let's call this fall, the thing after the summer holiday.
Yeah.
You started out by beginning to learn even a new language.
Right-ish. The incomprehensibleness yeah. that is JavaScript. Like, I don't think you can call... I know HTML is technically a language on account of the L, but like... I kind of could do that a little bit before. Oh, well, actually, yeah, I know it's not. It's not really a language.
But
I know.
Yeah, but you have these feinschmeckers that only HTML and CSS is not coding and proper programming, but I call bull crap on that. Yes, well, soon in CSS we even have like logic, so, well, there you have it. But...
I wrote some JavaScript. Not very much, but
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah, you did. That's called programming.
I can read JavaScript now, which I couldn't before. That feels like progress.
That's more than I can do.
Well, you know, not to the point of actually understanding what it's all doing, but like, you know, having some inkling of what the hell is happening in the syntax.
Yeah.
Same with CSS, actually. That was like, I could not grasp that before. But so, thank you. Well, I got to thank you, right?
Yeah, because in this story, I perhaps forgot to mention that me and my colleague had this sort of boot camp on the Holy Trinity of the internet, namely HTML and CSS and JavaScript.
It was very cool.
And you did stuff that most people spend weeks and months trying to learn in just like 3 days, 4 days.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean I absorbed any of it. That's the problem with like short, intensive bursts of learning, right?
Yeah.
Is that it makes sense at the time, and then you go away, and you're like, "What?"
But my hypothesis is that you now have enough to sort of proceed yourself.
I hope so. I can ask better questions than I could ask before, and I'm more motivated, and I have a project to build. So. All of these things are helpful.
And you did this even though you are girls. I'm not really interested, right?
Right.
You're just doing this for the appearance, right?
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I'm only interested in CSS so I can, like, change all the color of the text to match my nail polish, you know?
Of course.
It was super cool. I feel kind of much more empowered by that than by spending my development budget on going to a lot of conferences. With apologies to everyone who's listening who has either like put on conferences or invited me to conferences or whatever in the past, but this was pretty cool.
Yeah, I guess we have mentioned our gripes with conferences before, but I'm still a bit undecided, to be frank. So, I'm considering going to a conference just to sort of meet new people, because I haven't done that much networking in this area, sort of the more technical web stuff thing. And perhaps it would be good to do that, but I don't know, undecided.
You're not tempted. You're not that tempted by it.
For example, it would be perhaps kind of fun to attend, for example, the Slack conference in San Francisco, perhaps. But also, it sounds kind of tiresome. So,
so cool.
But, yeah, I don't know.
What do you think would be tiresome about it?
Traveling America.
Just like actually tiring rather than... So tiring rather than tiresome. Tiresome is like, oh, how tedious.
Yeah, you can potentially be that as well.
Well, sure, like... Yeah. San Francisco is great to visit, though. It's a very fun city. I mean, we have to say that. We're like a nerdy podcast, but it actually is.
It is. It is a city you can walk in.
Yes.
So.
I went to a conference once there, and only about half of the program was kind of genuinely that interesting to me. So I spent the rest of the time walking around the city, and that was time well spent. What time of year is the conference?
I think it's later this fall. It's not going to happen, but I considered it, and that was interesting that I did. Mm. So, or not that interesting, but for me personally.
Well, I guess if you've kind of in your head, you've gone, oh man, conferences are just such a waste of my time. And then you're just like, oh, well, this one sounds kind of interesting. I think it would be a super interesting conference, but, you know, I'm firmly riding the Slack bandwagon. So.
Yeah. Hmm. I'm just waiting for the backlash, the Slack backlash.
The slash. Back.
Slacklash.
I got nothing.
Because there's this new app now called Twist, and they claim to... So you already have this so-called Slack fatigue, right?
Yeah.
Because Slack can be a fire hose of incoming messages and... sort of this catalyzer of FOMO or something.
Title.
There's this new app, and I guess this isn't a recommendation, but it's called Twist. And the tagline is something like mindful work or something.
Okay, and what is the...
Mindful team communication.
And how is it different from, say, Slack?
For teams who want to make work calmer, more organized, and more productive.
Oh, I don't know. This sounds like creepy treehouse territory.
And more productive? Well, it's solving this by doing all in threads.
Okay.
And having a focus on direct messages.
Is this a bit like Socialcast?
No-ish. Well, it's like Socialcast saw Slack and did a thing.
Okay.
So it's more, yeah, I guess. But and we are not using numbers in our notification badges and so on.
Because it just stresses everyone the hell out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you've got to put Slack in there with Marmite, right? It's like a thing some people just love and a thing that some people just hate. But I think maybe if you grew up typing into an IRC box on the internet, you're going to be in the Slack, yes, please, pile. And if you didn't, maybe not.
Yeah,
we should do a study.
A study?
Yeah.
Yeah. To see the correlation between people who did use IRC and love Slack, or
for instance,
yeah, I can make a Slack bot.
Do it.
But, I have to finish the lunch bot before.
Yeah, you have too many projects.
Yeah, I guess, but. But yeah, so this Slack backlash thing or the Slack fatigue thing, it is interesting because it makes me question about, because my idea about Slack is you just have to accept that things are. There are conversations happening that you can't sort of follow all the time.
Mm.
And it should be okay to not answer people straight away and to use the away function and all that stuff.
Mm.
Sort of to make Slack a tool that works for you and not the other way around. But I recognize that there's perhaps... is sort of anti-patterns in how Slack works that makes people feel that they are missing out or have to stay on top of things, sort of the inbox syndrome. So, I think that technology and how stuff are sort of designed have an effect on how we behave. So while I mean that people have to be mindful in how they think about Slack and use it, I also mean that Slack perhaps can impact how you think and use it. So,
wait, are you saying it's changing our brains?
Yeah, it's changing your brains every day, every minute.
Wow, mind blown. Well, we should obviously ban this right now.
Or perhaps it's more like if you are in a state where you are not in... now we're coming into the problem of subjectivity and who is you and who is deciding. But when you are in sort of a state where you are not fully aware of where you are, Slack can be very sort of... What's the word?
Distracting? Preoccupying?
Yeah. Preoccupying, perhaps.
Okay.
Or if you find yourself undecided on your next task, or think that a problem is difficult, Slack can be very easy to...
Yeah, it's a time suck if you let it be a time suck. But also the way that it works, like you say, I think there's maybe some kind of anti-patterns in there that... lend themselves to, like, oh, I'll just check and see if I have any new Slack messages. Oh, hey, look, there's a discussion going on in this channel that, like, is absolutely non-compulsory, but it's so interesting. Yeah. If there weren't such a high overlap, though, between, like, that stuff and what we actually do all day, it would be a problem, I think. But a lot of it is just, like, workplace kind of gold. Like, a lot of it's super useful. And, yeah, some of it is just... silly, but I enjoy that too.
And also I've thought about because at least it, I guess it depends on the workplace and on the culture and so on. But if you have a Slack team where fun stuff is happening or interesting links are posted and so on, you end up being at work potentially all the time.
Right.
Sort of.
We talked about this a little bit in the last episode before the summer. I think that it's kind of hard to turn it off.
Yeah.
Because it's compelling. I think it's a thing that we didn't get into that time though, right? Is it's also super useful for knitting together a bunch of people who are not always in the same office. Like, there's your office and there's my office. And they're separated by, I actually don't know how many hundred kilometers, but, you know, like, a lot. And there's also people who are out with the client all day a lot of the time, which I sometimes am. And Slack is the connection to the mothership, but it's also kind of, it creates its own culture. It's us all trying to have a conversation when we can't all be co-located all the time. And create a thing and sort of define what our company culture is and how we want to be. And I don't know whether people really perceive it like that, but that is actually what's going on, I think.
Yeah, and that I guess there's where Twist, I guess, kind of fails, because Slack have done some things to make room for creating that sort of culture, mainly through having customizable like emoji and quotations and some sort of team personality flair.
Right.
Where Twist is kind of generic. So don't use Twist. But yeah, it has something more than just chat and threads and so on.
One of the things that I kind of feel that Slack differentiates, like, not to make this the Slack episode, because I think we've already talked about it quite a lot, but it's very kind of user-generated stuff. Like you say, there's a lot of customization possible, and that makes it feel like the people using Slack actually own their company Slack. So it's much more democratic in that way. Most other systems that I've ever used like that feel immensely kind of top-down. There's like, the organization has decreed that we will use this, and these structures exist, and you have to perform within these structures, and everything is very official, and there's no room for smileys or, you know, very... I just realized, sorry, I'm having listened to Evan talking all day on all afternoon on Friday, and I have a Norwegian-American friend, not our colleague, but another one, and they both, when they're... when they're talking in English, they both have this habit of adopting this kind of American kind of blah, 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 blah kind of.
Yeah, that's true.
And I noticed that what Evan did was, like, all his narrative was in Norwegian, and he would, like, it was like a sign language interpreter. He would kind of almost metaphorically step back into a different space, say something mocking in American English, and then step back into the main narrative and carry on, and then step out again. It was just awesome. Sorry, yeah, this was a thing that happened at work, but it amused me greatly.
Yeah, but we should mention that. I think we should mention that, because he did have his thing in Bergen some days before he came to you guys. And
this is the competition.
Shout out to Even Westvang of the company Bengler.
Yes.
He's even at Even on Twitter.
Mm.
Even.
Really?
Yeah.
He got that name? How long has he been there?
But he's like an internet 2009, actually.
Same as I think.
That's kind of late.
Yeah.
I joined Twitter in 2007, and I got the... I should have picked up a better Twitter handle.
You can change it now, but like that's your brand.
Yeah,
you know, you
change
that, then your brand recognition goes away.
I picked sort of, all right. But Evan, so he talked about machine learning.
Yes.
And I think he is... his education is in design and literature studies or something? Culture studies? Or
I don't know,
something.
The previous time I met him, we talked a lot about information architecture. There was a lot of kind of that sort of nerding. But yeah, he's educated himself like so much about this. Amazing how much he knows.
Yeah, his brain seems to operate on a slightly sort of higher frequency, so he gets more stuff in.
It's amazing. I want to be him when I grow up.
And he has done lots of interesting stuff, but now he's into machine learning. And one of the funniest examples of that is he trained a model on the Crunchbase company names that had got funding, and
right.
generated this long list of new company names. You have to be there, I guess, but
they are super. go on.
Yeah, but his point though about machine learning, which also is interesting given the topic of this podcast, which is small differences and I guess the difficult translation between two languages and so on, which machine learning is applied to. So his point was that in this field you have all this amazing stuff happening every week. So just a couple of months ago, Google published sort of this approach in machine learning called sequence to sequence, which translates whole sentence structures from a language to another. This is what drives Google Translate and so on.
Hmm.
But if you think about how we have approached this problem from a technical now I'm struggling to generate language, but it's just mind blowing, right? And so there's one side, and also we don't understand fully how this works. Well, we kind of do, but not really.
Yeah, the fact that you can get a result out and you don't really know how you got it is both interesting and fascinating, and also kind of a little bit problematic at times.
Yeah, and also the concepts that sort of goes into machine learning isn't that difficult to grasp on sort of on the basic level.
Right.
You just try to decrease the standard or the deviation from the mean, sort of just very many times in many sort of different ways.
And that's awesome if people know what decrease the deviation from the mean means. But you try and iterate until like the difference between what you put in and what you want to get out or something is reduced or two measures are reduced or whatever. Yeah.
Just in many dimensions.
Yeah.
Many, 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 many times.
That's the head-bending part about it, actually, is it's almost impossible to think about. Like, my husband works with multidimensional data sets, and, like, it would just break my head to be thinking about that, because you can have, like, 1,000 dimensions of data and be trying to work with this and be trying to produce something meaningful from it, and because our ability to kind of visualize it peters out after about 3 or 4 dimensions, it's just really hard.
Has it ever happened that your husband has tried to go through a wall or something?
Yeah,
made dinner for breakfast?
Also possible. We did once have a Christmas dinner in the middle of July because we missed Christmas and thought it would be nice. It really was, but my advice to you was never run an oven at 200 degrees in a south-facing apartment in July. But it was nice.
Because if language affects our sort of perception of reality, What about multidimensional statistics?
Right. Yeah. What's the equivalent to? I can't even. This is how mashed my brain is this morning. I can't even think of the movie title.
Arrival.
Thank you. My brain was saying Awakenings. No. Yeah. You reminded me the Evans generating company names, startup names, which is brilliant. Dan Hon in the States did a very similar thing where he generated UK place names, taking, like a training set, and then generated a whole bunch of new ones based on sort of neural net iteration. And there's a link in Slack. It's very fun. People can look that up. But you get the idea, like you read it and you're like, right, okay, I see how this works. And it's actually quite a nice, he actually does like a recipe for it, or writes a recipe for it, so you can just describe his method and you can go and mess around with that a little bit. So that's going on my list of hobbies to try. What would you generate though, like given a sort of a training set, what would you make new ones of?
Yeah, I and Evan talked about this actually, to do kind of the same thing with Norwegian place names. But he did this thing with Norwegian company names, and the results were pretty boring.
Right, generic. He mentioned this because the names were not interesting enough to generate variety, right?
Yeah, and I suspect it's the same thing with Norwegian place names.
I wonder if you get a different result with US place names. Like, certainly in the kind of the Midwest, a lot of US place names are sort of very, very basic. They're named after things that people are just like, they're so tired of, right? Okay, you know what? We've got 15 Aberdeens and a dozen Londons. Let's just call this place after the first thing we see. Little Rock? Right, okay, you got it. You know, like Riverbend? Okay, fine.
Just New London and New this and New that.
Indeed.
But because I suspect that there's a higher variety in British place names than US place names.
Do you think that is because the language that we are using has been used longer in the UK, and thus we've had longer to iterate than the US, where people are using different languages until, 300-400 years ago?
Yeah, and I guess because most of what we recognize as US place names has been applied in a much shorter span of time.
So they just need to iterate for longer.
Yeah. But it would be interesting to make this infographic about the variance of place names.
What do you measure them on?
Well, if you count all the repeated place names. Sort of to how many do you have and how many are sort of used several places? Because there's multiple places in Norway. It's called Nes or Hovden or sort of this topographical kind of place name stuff.
Same in the UK, actually.
I guess.
But it's usually... Actually, no, there's usually a modifier. Like you have something Ness or whatever, but like there's a thing before it that modifies it. Not always, but sometimes.
More research is needed.
Right. We should change the podcast title to that. I'm having a thoughtful pause, but I got nothing.
We can make this a short one. It's okay.
I'm sure there was other stuff. If it's short, this is fine. I got stuff to do. I'm sure you do as well.
Just to summarize, we have talked about DoFi on the internet.
Slack.
Science, epistemology, Slack.
Machine learning.
Yeah.
Bathtub distributions again. I think you're now qualified to use the phrase Marmite distribution if you want to. You have been there. You've got the T-shirt.
But the Marmite, we should make a T-shirt. But is that the same as the bathtub distribution? Or is the line in between lacking? sort of.
Well, arguably, in a bathtub distribution, the line between is also lacking.
So, this is my suggestion. So the Marmite distribution, you have the line that goes down again to zero, and then it sort of goes into another dimension, which means that it has disappeared from our 2D, two-axis graph, right? And then it appears again.
Where has it gone in the intervening time?
Well, only
the Marmite dimension. Will,
yeah, there you have it. Because I suspect that even though you are on the sort of side where people dislike it, you can keep eating it and sort of have an appreciation.
It's like a grudging appreciation of Marmite.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there are that many people who would do that.
We don't know yet because we haven't accessed this dimension of the graph.
Wow. So there's like a whole kind of orthogonal dimension. I'm just doing a Google Scholar search for Marmite.
I guess you could have a competition where people could draw this function for this graph. And we need more than the three or four dimensions.
I just took a minute to see if Google Scholar had any hits for Marmite, and it does. It seems like it's a programming language or something. which I guess you either like or don't, but...
Who calls a programming language after Marmite?
Maybe. I didn't follow that up. It might be just something programming related. But then there's also people trying to treat anemia with Marmite.
Marmite, repurposing web content through end-user programming.
Oh, and then we've got a very old paper about the interaction between things like Marmite and monoamine oxidase inhibitors, which are like a relatively old-school treatment for mood disorders. Pre-Prozac. It's true, actually. Like, if you were put on those, there's like lots of things you're not supposed to eat, I think, like blue cheese, red wine, stuff like that, because it metabolizes the things you don't want or interacts with the drugs in some ways or something. I can't remember.
The internet is a fantastic place. I'm tempted to make this my cultural pick of the week, but
Marmite on Google Scholar.
There's a tremendous amount of web content available today, but it is not always in a form that supports end users' needs, plural. A rapidly growing community of developers is addressing this problem by creating mashups that combine existing web content and services in new ways. However, creating a mashup takes a high level of programming expertise. Towards this end, we are developing Marmite, a tool that will let everyday end users create mashups by making it easy to extract content from web pages and so on.
Extract yeast or extract. Maybe that's why they chose it.
This is from 2007, 10 years ago. So we are currently no longer working on Marmite. We have moved on a new project called Haggis, which is looking at providing a different model of extracting, processing, and visualization data extracted from the web.
See what they did there.
And the people behind this project is Jeff Wong and Jason Hong. There we have it.
Oh, man. Oh, this is good. Okay, so Journal of Food Engineering, 2008. Solid liquid transitions in the rheology, that's R-H-E-O, of a structured yeast extract paste Marmite. So one of the things about Marmite, right? You know the kind of the... there's an experiment somewhere where they've got tar or something like that, and they it drips. It's really, really viscous, and it drips about one drip every few years or something like that, and it's being studied because of its immense viscosity. We tried this at home with Marmite several years ago, but these people have actually done like a proper kind of proper scientific test. Creep tests. Oh, I like the sound of that. Creep tests indicated a transition between solid and liquid regimes at a critical stress. So I guess they stretched it, right? That is a strong function of the solids content of the sample. A true yield stress was not found, although this may be related to the limits of the... I stopped caring, but...
The creep test, it sounds also like something you do on 4chan.
Oh, right. I think if we applied the creep test before I started typing angrily into a box, I would be a lot saner. Okay, so Google Scholar Marmite, that turns out to be the win of the day. Did we even have, like, cultural picks?
Yeah, I have a cultural
pick. Oh, look at me, I have a cultural pick. All right, yeah. Go on.
You also have a cultural pick.
Oh, yeah.
Look at you.
All right, you first.
So I observed that someone already recommended this cultural pick to you in Slack, actually.
You're going to help me a little bit. I get a lot of recommendations for things in Slack.
Sunday, August 13th, yeah. In film and series, Slack channel, Audun recommended October 30th. No, this is how my brain works. So Audun gave you the release date of Stranger Things, which is
Season
October
two.
31st. Yeah.
Yes.
And somehow in my brain, this transformed into Oslo, August 31st, a film by Joachim Trier.
Okay.
Can't explain that.
It seems like a logical transition. Tell me about the film. Wait, is this the guy who did the music videos that we looked at before?
No.
Okay. Who's that?
Same.
Joachim, someone else.
There seems to be... I don't think it is.
Okay.
Are they even related? I have to look this up. But Joachim Trier, he has done a film called Reprisa, which you perhaps have seen.
No.
Maybe.
What's it about?
See that. What's it? It's sort of, it's contemporary. It's about being in your mid-20s, being a writer and all that stuff.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So.
So it's not autobiographical in any way.
And he makes I guess they are existential in a way, films, but they are really good and moody and so on. And Oslo, August 31st. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because you felt the need to say he makes existential films, comma, but they're really good.
Yeah. but this movie, it's based in Oslo, obviously, which you can appreciate now because I guess you will recognize these sort of different areas and so on. And I don't know how much I want to say about it.
Okay. No spoilers.
Yeah, but
.
I guess it's not a spoiler, and I guess it isn't perhaps inviting for a sort of a cozy movie night, but the main character, Anders, is a recovering drug addict in a Oslo rehab clinic.
Oh, nice and upbeat. The last Norwegian film you recommended to me was like psychologically scarring, so I need to kind of gird my loins before going into this, I think.
Yeah, I guess you have to. But Joachim Trier, he also made a movie 2 years ago called Louder Than Bombs.
I wanted to see that. I really want to see that.
And now he's out. It premieres this weekend, I think, or perhaps a bit later, called Thelma.
Hmm.
And which also seems to be very interesting. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you for reminding me about Louder Than Bombs. Like, I'm a huge Jesse Eisenberg fan. someone who like talks 100 miles an hour and is clearly very bright.
Yeah.
And is very fun to watch.
He was very good in Arrested Development.
He was in that?
You haven't heard about the Jesse Eisenberg, Michael Cera confusion thing?
Wait, Michael Cera's in Arrested Development? But seriously, I haven't watched it.
I forgot you haven't.
Yeah, I don't understand how people. I kind of do understand how people confuse them, but like, not really. Not after more than about 2 seconds.
Yeah, well, they are sort of these nerdy, eccentric white guys with short hair.
Yeah, but like,
they all look the same.
Yeah, but they are different qualitatively. That said, I've thought for a while it would be very fun to watch a movie. I know Jesse Eisenberg's already done a movie where he plays like identical twins, but like I thought it would be really fun if he and Michael Cera were in a movie as kind of identical twins.
So how much of a Jesse Eisenberg fan are you?
At least 8 on the scale, I would say, which does not mean I've seen all his stuff. Merely that I think he's very fun to watch.
So have you seen Now You See Me?
Yeah, it was disappointing, man.
Yeah.
Very disappointing.
And Zombieland?
Yes. What a great movie. But have you seen Adventureland?
But yeah, I have. But when you look up Jesse Eisenberg on Google, there's actually a picture of Michael Cera. So that proves my point. Machine learning tells the truth.
Absolutely. So. Oh, that's great. That's really fun. Did I have a cultural pick of the week? What was mine? Yeah. So there's an election coming, right? There's a lot of politics sloshing around in Norway at the moment.
Well,
yeah, that's exactly the right noise.
Yeah.
A lot of, Carry on.
No, you carry on.
So one of the things that I've watched this year, and I confess that I have maybe 1 or 2 episodes left to go, is because I've been watching it very, very slowly and drawn out, is Occupied. Which is a Norwegian series, which is really fun and interesting and thoughtful, actually. It's kind of an interesting treatment of what could happen in Europe now-ish. And one of the things that happens in it is that one of the characters that we follow is the Prime Minister. And he has a particular way of the guy who plays the Prime Minister. I don't know how much he actually talks like this in reality, but he talks... Like, he's got that kind of political kind of delivery down. Like, when he's making a speech or whatever, he delivers it in that way. And then I started hearing podcasts and TV and stuff with people politicking, because we're coming up to an election and everybody's sort of gearing up and everyone's kind of making impassioned speeches about this or that. And I was like, they sound exactly like the guy in Occupied. And not just, I'm not talking about accent or dialect or anything like that. I'm talking about the whole kind of rhetorical kind of up and down and the cadence of it. And it's really, weirdly characteristic. Like it's its own thing. And I've never thought about that as an English speaker when I'm watching politicians orate. I've never thought about it. I feel like there's more variety in how that's done. But when I'm hearing people debating in Parliament here, or I'm hearing people give speeches designed to appeal to an electorate who's going to vote soon, I'm just struck by the uniformity of what is, even despite people's dialects, regional dialects, the uniformity of how they express it and the tonal kind of the up and down and the kind of the how they navigate through that as a kind of, like if you couldn't understand what they were saying, they would all sound exactly the same. It's extraordinary. But I thought it was very funny that I was, oh, they sound like that guy in the TV series. But like, he's nailed it, and or the writers have nailed it, but he has really nailed that kind of that mode of delivery. And then I had to stop listening to it because it's not a restful thing to listen to. It's argumentative in its up and downness.
Yeah.
Is this recognizable to you as a native speaker?
Yeah, it is. And a part of doing successful political satire in Norway is to nail this cadence or sort of do that thing. And but you also have that for... obviously, sort of news anchors and so on.
Right, they have their own vocabulary of this, right?
And just to touch on your cultural pick, I guess 5080, you are not a part of Facebook, so
no.
You perhaps have missed this.
What's 5080?
That's sort of the now political satire source for stuff in Norway. So, but they have a collaboration with NRK. So I guess I can find you some videos, and they have built their thing around nailing this cadence, primarily for news anchors and so on. But they also have sort of politicians in the program. So
I think sketch shows in the UK might have also done this with the weather reporting in the past.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that the Fast Show or someone like that did. There was a weather sketch. It was about a Spanish weather presenter. He was basically like always just saying, and it's going to be sunny. And then very occasionally there would be like a thundercloud or something, and it would be like, Herd Krise.
Yeah, we have those as well.
Yeah. Funny.
Funny. Yeah, I guess this is the show.
I guess it's...
Will we be back? That's the question.
I hope so. Well, we have something to talk about. God, I hope so. There's only so many episodes we can do about Slack. You know that, right?
Yeah, we have some, publishing irregularities.
Yeah, I'll get it out.
Let's say that we will be back in regular schedule come September. Off from a rocky start.
That's optimistic. I hope we get it down before that. The next episode will be out tomorrow, which makes no sense to people who are actually listening to this, which is now last week.
Yeah, so if you wanted to call in to last episode, you should have called in 2 weeks ago.
Didn't we do this joke several? This is just now a level
and
of meta.
It is a Merlin Land ripoff. And he ripped it off from,
whatever that source material is. Yeah, something else. There's nothing original. Certainly not on the internet.
Mr. Show, yeah.
Right. Takk for at du hørte på.
Takk for at du hørte på.
No, wait, what? Should we set what?
No, I'm just... what should we do next time?
I don't know. We should pick a chewy subject. Like, we've done kind of the superficial stuff, but is there anything superficial left to do, or do you want to just dive into something that's kind of a bit more, like, culturally rich? I don't know. Not that supermarkets and stuff are not culturally rich, actually.
Because we have a topic list.
Oh, do we?
And it's death, social mores, language, working in a way now.
We have so many.
Humor. Humor, back to school. So we have done some of this already.
Yeah.
But the problem is that some of these topics seems to require some preparing.
Oh yeah. Well, you see, that's always going to let us down, isn't it?
And we also always have the swearing episode.
Oh, we still didn't do that. Oh my God. That's funny. That needs to be. I think I agree with you. That needs to be done with like a live audience of people. I think that's.
Yeah,
that's a collective effort, that one. So we need to be at least in the same place for that.
And we have to take this show to a place where people actually would show up.
So not our office then.
We have to do something with our numbers. Should we buy some Facebook ads or something?
With our, we need a sponsor to give us money so that we can buy some Facebook ads. We seem locked in a death spiral.
If you have money and want to sponsor us, please contact us through our contact form, which can be found where?
smalldifferences.fireside.fm. Please do use the contact form if you want to chat to us. It's a good way of doing it. We promise we read, we usually reply, if not in typing, but like actually in the podcast. Did Chris come back to you about something? Chris, listener Chris, who wrote in?
No, but he hasn't heard the advice yet.
passage? Good point. I don't know. That was, wasn't that 3 weeks?
Perhaps
of,
I don't remember. Perhaps in another dimension. But
with the bathtub water.
Perhaps he actually did take our advice and began to learn Norwegian and now is deep in some existential Scandinavian pit.
There is nowhere to go from there.
No.
Alright.
Next time.
Content. We promise content.
Ha det bra, takk for at du hørte på.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.